Welcome to part two of topic two, where we continue with the consideration of major factors involved in the principle of individuality. The fifth factor is the nature of the skill. More complicated skills require more time for development. So a complex sport requires more training time than would be a simple sport. A team game such as field hockey would require more training time than, say, would an activity like a discus throw. Not only is the complicated nature of the skill require more training time, but it also takes longer time in terms of calendar years to achieve the highest level of performance. So complex, involved activities require more training time and a longer time to get to the zenith of performance for each individual. In sporting situations where both complex and relatively simple activities are performed, the training programs of the individuals involved would be different. For example, in the sport of swimming, some swimmers are specialist breaststrokers. Other swimmers swim the medley stroke. The medley swimmer would require to do more training and would take longer to achieve a maximum level of performance than would be the specialist, more simple breaststroker. This happens in a variety of sports, track and field being another one where there are limited activities and much more complex activity. Certainly in track and field, a decathlete would require a lot more training and would take longer to reach an optimal level of performance in terms of years of training than would be a specialist sprinter or hurdler. The sixth factor that produces individual variations are the reinforcers derived from the activity. The stronger the reinforcers or incentives or motivations, the faster will be the acquisition of skill and the adaptation to training. Since the things that do reinforce athletes from sporting participation vary greatly between individuals, then the rates of acquisition and development appropriate for the type of reinforcement experienced by an individual will vary greatly. One can assume that low progress rates might reflect low incentive value or reinforcing value of the activity rather than a low talent or an already achieved ceiling level of development. But the enjoyment and motivation for performance is going to modify the rates of development and the amount of development that is required to achieve an optimal level. Generally, the greater the number of reinforcers and the higher the motivation of an athlete, the better will be the adaptation of the athlete to training. The seventh factor are the reasons for participation. An approach response, where the athlete says, "I like the sport," or "I like doing it," is a positive motivation, and this produces faster learning rates and improvements than in athletes who are forced to participate. Many athletes are participating because there's nothing better to do, they're doing it for parental pressure, or it's their scholarshiped activity. When athletes are not voluntarily, positively participating in the sport, their rates of development are likely to be less than optimal. So the measurement of why one performs, that is, discovering the motivational reasons for participation in the sport, could explain individual variations in development and performance improvement. The eighth factor is stimulus variation. When there is a lot of learning that takes place in the environment, the more constant the learning environment, the faster will be the acquisition rate. Constancy here refers to the way instruction is given, the way the environment is administered, and the general teaching strategies and training program structures that are offered to athletes. When these are relatively consistent, then athletes can optimize their responses to each new situation, because each new situation will have fewer new elements in it to which adaptation is required, and that adaptation will detract from the learning capacity that can be applied to the task. So having consistent ways of organizing and instructing activities is a good feature for allowing individuals to adapt their own particular personal capacities to the learning functions which are required in the training situation. The ninth factor is the degree of distraction. Distraction reduces the rate of learning, particularly in the early stages of learning something new. If the sporting environment is one where there are a lot of distractions, say there are a lot of athletes in the same environment, many of whom are not involved in activity but are waiting their turn, then usually the distraction level is high, and that distraction interferes with the capacity of a performer to improve. When learning is required in a sporting situation, minimizing the distraction, particularly from other athletes or from spectators, is a basic requirement for effective learning and optimal learning to occur. The tenth factor is stimulus ambiguity. This has been briefly touched upon when we talked about stimulus variation. It requires that cues and directions for instruction and training need to be as clear as possible. The language that's used and the formations which are organized, if they are consistent, will allow athletes to get about the purpose of learning rather than adapting to some new challenging form of organization. A consistent environment that is reduced in its inconsistency allows athlete energies and capacities to be used for training and improving rather than adapting to the situational nuances of training, which of course would have no carryover to a competitive setting. These 10 factors do affect the individuality of a response. But there are many more factors that have not been discussed here. The principle of individuality should underlie any coaching decision for any particular individual, whether it's in a team or an individual sport. Let's summarize this with the implication of these 10 features for coaching. The amount of time allocated to training depends upon age. This will affect the design of age programs. Squads and teams will train on programs according to their stage of training and will not all be on the same curriculum of learning. The activities experienced should be according to the history of involvement of the athlete, not their chronological age. The skill level of an athlete will govern the amount of time allocated to the activity according to specified goals that are appropriate to that skill level. The institutionalized learning steps in static programs should disappear if this is the case. That is, not all individuals will learn the same skill the same way, which seems to be a basic assumption of many coaching programs. Complicated skills and games will be allocated more time than will simple activities. The concept of variable programming should be used in training to accommodate these differences in complications. The reinforcers to be derived from an activity will be appropriate to each individual, and therefore psychological handling will also need to be individualized with each athlete. Forced participation should not be encouraged. More often than not, it causes more problems and headaches than the effort warrants. It produces very low returns for coaching effort expended. So participation should be for positive reasons. Discovering those reasons and then modifying the environment so that the reinforcers gained to accommodate those reasons can be experienced is a requirement for effective coaching. Training and teaching environments should be constructed to produce constant training situation, particularly for the early stages of development. Distractions should be eliminated where possible. This should be done through control and self-preoccupied instructional techniques. Instructional modes, such as peer instruction, programmed instruction, the use of appropriate vocabulary and imagery, should be developed. Being a good teacher and one who accommodates individual capacities in learning is a crucial ingredient of effective coaching. To sum up then, the need for engineering individualized training and instructional situations is clear. This engineering and accommodation is going to drastically affect the level of coaching effectiveness that can be provided for each individual, even though those individuals are in group settings. This completes topic 2.